The producers.
This is an issue. I've got about three or four more things I want to bring up, but this is an issue I wanted to get your official on my show take on, as it's been discussed all over Facebook, Twitter, different other message boards. The whole Source Connect versus ISDN versus the new technologies that have come into play recently. So you'll hear, ISDN's dead. Get away from it. It's going away. Then you'll hear, nope, Verizon just bought a company that's installing brand new ISDN lines all over the world and everything's great. And then, you know, Source Connect. Source Connect is amazing. It's so, you know, or it blows. Like, I don't know what to believe because I hear literally all sides of all issues from all people all the time. So, first of all, ISDN, is it actually dying? Is it increasing and growing or is it stagnant?
It is, boy, I probably am installing ISDN or helping or guiding or in some way involved with somebody getting ISDN on a monthly basis. So there is still a demand for it, and it's because of their clients or their potential clients insist on it. Yep. So there's still, especially in Hollywood, a huge installed user base of ISDN studios. It is still a very much a part of their workflow. And if there's any area of the industry that's very slow to change, it is the major Hollywood and broadcast networks. They are the slowest to adopt to new things. So they have a system that works. They've trained up on it, and they've used it now for 15, 20 years, and they ain't getting rid of it until Verizon...
It's pried from their cold, dead hand.
Yeah, from my cold, dead hands.
Yeah.
It's not going anywhere. And those of my clients who use ISDN, they don't want it to go anywhere either because, frankly, it's a wonderful way to work.
It's really easy and really quality.
The box goes bleep, bleep, and you walk into the booth and you put on your headphones and you read the script and you hang up. And you're done. You know, you're not editing and posting files and sending stuff. So for those that have been making their living on ISDN for so long, the idea of it going away is just terrifying. But you know, we've got other tools. It's just a matter of getting the networks, the top brass and the top of the production chain to open themselves up to using these new tools. And Source Connect obviously is one of the big alternatives. Been around a long time. It's really established. It's really reliable now.
I still hear complaints that Source Connect isn't there are quality issues. Can you speak to that? Is that true? And why would it be true if it is true?
If people are confusing quality with reliability, maybe that's the case. But it is not a quality problem at all.
Okay.
Because it's using this AAC audio codec, which is probably most well known because when the iPod came out 8 years ago or whatever, that was the audio codec of choice that Apple used for their music. And it's the same codec that that Source Connect is using. The Zephyr Extreme, for example, has supported AAC for over 10 years. It's just not ever been a standard. But the sound quality is every bit as good as MPEG Layer 2 Mono 128.
Which is way better than an MP3, right? Or,
well, it's...
It's compressed, but it's not as...
It's still compressed, but it's not compressed as much because it's a mono audio feed going at a 128 kilobit per second bit rate.
Which is why typically an ISDN will have two phone lines and you'll be shooting one up and one down.
It actually is taking two B channels, which are two phone numbers, gluing them together to give you a fatter pipe. Because each B channel is 64K. It gets glued together in the network to turn it into 128K. And then you can send that L2, layer 2 mono MPEG stream at 128. So, but anyway, you know, Source Connect can do the same thing with AAC and at half the bit rate. So at 64K... AAC, the quality is equivalent to 128 L2. So that's not an issue. But that's at like mid quality. You can go way beyond that.
With Source Connect.
You can get much better. You can get Source Connect's quality to eclipse ISDN. No problem. So that's really not an argument anymore. The thing, though, is that it's configured incorrectly so many times. And the problem with Source Connect, if it had any problem, is that it can be used without configuring it incorrectly. You can still use Source Connect and configure it wrong.
I understand.
And kind of limp along. And then all of a sudden, one day, you'll do that session where your incorrect configuration on your network now becomes a problem. And all of a sudden, now Source Connect is unreliable. And it's really because of just a lack of education and lack of experience of the engineers who are using it that aren't configuring it correctly.
Yeah.
So it's gotten a bad rap because of that. But now there's these new things, right? There's these new fun tools that are coming along, like IPDTL. We're calling it IPDiddle.
All the cool kids are talking about IPDiddle these days.
The cool kids are talking about IPDiddle.
And I want to know what the hell this IPDiddle is.
So IPDiddle is using tools that are built into Google Chrome to allow you to send audio in real time back and forth via the internet, but using Google Chrome.
Is this the same type of transmission that maybe a Skype uses?
No, it's a codec change. So the codec is that buzzword for how do you encode and decode the audio from analog to digital.
Okay.
MPEG MP3 being by far the 800-pound gorilla. Everybody knows what an MP3 is. But Skype is using something called Silk, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
You know, they're using a different codec. And then there's this new codec that came out last year called Opus. O-P-U-S. And Opus is just the latest generation. And what they've done is they figured out a way to get the audio quality of what you might hear on an MP3 with the latency of something more like G.722 for all you radio guys, which has very, very low, low delay. So you get extremely low latency with high quality audio using this Opus.
So how do I use this Opus? How do I get that going?
Well, that's what's wrapped, built into IPDiddle. So IPDTL is providing a means of using this Opus codec so that people can connect to each other over the internet. And it's wrapped into Google Chrome. So right now, you have to use Google Chrome. Now, the cool thing is you can use Google Chrome on an Android phone or on Mac or on Windows or on Linux or on a Chromebook. And you can use this service. At the same time, we've got Source Connect coming out with their flavor of this Opus called Source Connect Now. And I work really closely with them in consulting with them back and forth. And I've, you know, in full disclosure, I was a dealer for, and still am through Edge, but I was a dealer for Source Elements software for a very long time. So, you know, I'm not a completely neutral party on this, but I will say that Source Connect Now is going to be as good, if not better, than IPDiddle because of its just superior user interface and superior support network of tech people that they have backing it up. So if something goes wrong, they've got the personnel to handle it.
Let's assume then that this IPDiddle with their Opus is good enough. You know, nobody's going to say, well, I don't think that's quite good enough. You're fired. And then you've got Source Connect with Now. That's also good enough. I mean, it's probably very good. Wait, I'm saying that at a minimum, a conservative word. So anyway.
Right.
Compare the two, price-wise, ease of use, and ease of get. Compare those two then.
With each other?
Yeah. You know, I mean, if I want to get one of them, you know, what am I going to have to pay for one versus the other? You know, which one's going to be more supported? Which one's going to give me less problems down the road? Those kinds of things.
It's sort of a VHS and Betamax argument right now.
Well, because Beta was better, but they died.
Beta was better, but it died. So who's the Beta here?
Yeah.
It's too early to tell. Source Connect Now is very much Beta right now. It's literally in daily updates. I was actually on Skype. Actually, I was on Source Connect Now with Rebecca from Source Elements, who's the engineer that's designing the software right now. And it's really a daily updates. So it's really kind of interesting time. At NAB, they're going to come out. It's going to be their big coming out party, and they're going to open it up to the world. But it's in beta right now. So it's really so hard to say. If you ask me again in a month, I'll have a much clearer picture. But based on what I'm seeing, price-wise, they're going to be extremely close in price. So there's really not going to be a price barrier.
Am I misinformed, or isn't Ipdiddle or that company with the Opus codec, isn't that more of a buy when you need it type of a scenario, and Source Connect is a subscription scenario?
No, they're both subscription. With Ipdiddle, you can pay a year up front, or you can pay a monthly fee.
Okay, I'm thinking of a different competitor then.
SoundStreak.
That's it. That's the one.
SoundStreak, boy, I won't even go on that tangent because it is so different in a lot of ways. But SoundStreak is more of an on-demand system where it doesn't cost anything to use it until you need it, and then you pay for it. So it's a totally different business model, and I think they're having a real challenge making it move because the burden lies on the production to pay for it. And I think that's going to be a challenge depending on who your production is. But
yeah.
That is the one that uses the sort of on-demand pricing. These others are services. So, these are more like paying for, fill-in-the-blank service that you use every month, Netflix or something.
Yeah.
You pay $8 a month for Netflix. You get all you can eat. Well, that's how Ipdiddle and Source Connect now are set up. We don't know the pricing yet on Source Connect now, though.
So as alternatives to ISDN, you have Source Connect and Ipdiddle, IPDTL.
IP down the line.
IP down the line. There we go. That actually...
That's what it means.
That makes more sense to me. Anyway, these types of... their plugins, are they both plugins that run within Pro Tools or another DAW?
Good question. They are not. That is where Source Connect is very different. It actually has a plugin architecture that is kind of wrapped into it or built into it. However, Source Connect... is not ever resting on their laurels, and they're developing Source Nexus. And what Source Nexus is a plugin architecture that works in AAX and AU and VST and all these different plugins. And it provides this virtual audio patch cable that lets you patch audio to and from anything else on your computer.
Okay.
But whether it be virtual instruments, Source Connect now, even IPDTL, anything else that can assign an in and an out, mm-hmm. can be assigned to Source Nexus and then turned into a plugin. So that problem is being solved as we speak. So right now, if you're the engineer and you have to record a stream from IPDTL, you have to, put on your thinking cap, and you end up having to usually physically audio patch one audio device, say your Mac's built-in line headphone jack or something, and then run that to another input on your Digio O2, for an example. Uh-huh. And you have to record it that way. It's kind of a little bit of a kludge. Uh-huh. If you think of IPDTL like ISDN, we wouldn't think twice about patching an input and an output from a Zephyr, into a console. Now, it's the same thing, except in this case, IPDTL is using another audio interface. It could be a USB device, it could be whatever. But that's the kind of the process you have to go through to record from and send audio to these other systems. But once Source Nexus comes out, we can now tie all that stuff back into a plugin, and everything can stay inside the digital domain. It'll be pretty slick. And that, I think that's also going to be promoted and announced at NAB. So it's a really exciting time. This is I've never been more excited about new things being developed and coming out. I mean, from a hardware perspective, the new Apollo Twin, the little desktop Apollo thing that Universal Audio came out with, is so freaking cool.
Why? What's so cool about
really that? I've just been jazzed about it because it's an all-in-one box that really can act as the hub of a voiceover studio. It's got just enough in and out to provide, say, a send and return for a foam patch and another send and return for, say, Skype or something, or IPDTL.
So it's an audio interface for your computer. It acts as an audio interface, but
it's an M-Box.
Yeah.
It's an M-Box, but it's using Thunderbolt.
Okay,
so
there we
it's
go.
The latest technology for audio.
Does it use anything
video.
But Thunderbolt, or does it have to be Thunderbolt?
The Apollo Duo and Quad, which are the older brothers of it, the rack mount units that have been around about a year,
yeah,
those are Thunderbolt or FireWire, but they, just to save money and cost and size, they went all in on Thunderbolt. So this sucker is strictly Thunderbolt. So it's going to alienate, you know, quite a few systems, I'm sure, because of that.
It's like 60% of the world, right? I mean, we're still maybe more. Mm-hmm. I mean, what percentage of the world is not using a Mac still?
Yeah, they're putting their neck out there and saying that this is the best way to do this, and we're gonna go all in on Thunderbolt. And that's what they're doing.
Good luck.
Pretty bold move where everybody else is using USB 2.
What's the virtue of that? Because I thought that you can still get high bandwidth in and outs through FireWire, for example, or USB 3.
I'm not a total expert on this stuff, but I do know that Thunderbolt is more like a direct channel of data to the CPU, whereas USB has a chipset that has to run on its own and act as the go-between to get data to and from the processor.
Okay.
Thunderbolt is more like PCIe, the PCI slots in a Mac Pro. Yep. Thunderbolt is like an external architecture that talks much more directly to the computer.
So to really dumb it down like I'm good at doing, it's basically just a much more direct way to get the information where it needs to go without as many middlemen talking to it on the way.
Less latency, less middlemen, less interruptions in the feed. It can carry way more data. It's a huge pipe, you know.
But I mean, at the end of the day,
or something,
you don't really need all that data when you're talking about audio.
You don't. But you have massive amounts of overhead, right? Or headroom, not overhead, but just headroom for the system. So it's extremely reliable, very very low latency, and the other bell and whistle that makes this Apollo little desktop guy, the little twin Solo, I think is the best deal at like $699, I think it is. Is it has built-in UAD processing, and for those that don't know what that is, it allows you to insert, say, a virtual version of an SSL API, Neve, whatever channel strip of your dreams you want to use, and insert it virtually into the signal path before the audio even hits your headphones. So you can hear and track through these virtual processors in real time.
Wow.
And the latency is basically undetectable.
They're taking a lot of the brunt of that processing power, kind of like the UA hardware does.
It is the UAD. So if you're familiar with the UAD stuff, wrapped up inside an audio interface, all in one little tiny box for less than the price of a UAD card, I think. It's pretty mind-blowing.
Does it come with any cool plugins?
It comes with a handful of plugins. Not many, but one of them that I think that they've promoted, I saw them at NAMM show, and if you go to my YouTube channel the Edge Studio YouTube channel where I do Widom's World, one of my other things that I do, if you type in Widom's, WHITTAM, and then NAMM, you'll find all the videos I did at NAMM this year. But based on what they told me, is it does come with a new preamp emulator. So if you like the Universal 610 tube preamp, they throw that in. I think it's like a $200 preamp plugin. But you can get that tube preamp sound right built into the processor now. So it comes with a handful, not a lot. So if you want that Neve, or you want the API, or you want the SSL, you are going to have to shell out a few $100, maybe $200 or $300.
I had someone talking to me about this Apollo the other day, and I wasn't probably giving it enough of my attention, but you've made it. You should be selling it, unless you already are, because it's.
I don't sell anything.
Yeah,
we don't sell deal equipment at all. But I really am neutral on this. It is until I have one in my hot little hands to run it through its paces. I can't say unadulterated, completely, unequivocally, it's the ultimate device. But I have a handful of clients or just colleagues that have bought them and used them that it has so far proven itself to be really rock solid, reliable, and just sound quality wise, unbelievably good.
One more time, give us the exact name and model of the one you were being specific about and that price range you were talking about.
Yeah, for the voice actor who only needs couple inputs, couple outputs, does not need a sophisticated setup. The Universal Audio Apollo Twin Solo. if that's not confusing enough, they have the twin solo and the twin duo, and the difference is the amount of onboard DSP. So if you are a producer, so a lot of you guys are producers, and you want to use a lot of UAD processing power,
yeah,
go with the duo, because it gives you twice as much horsepower. If you're a talent and you're just tracking through a couple of plugins, then you really only need the solo.
Okay.
The twin solo will give you the power you need. So I hope that clarifies it a bit. Based on my knowledge, that's kind of where you want to be looking.
Yeah, that's cool. I actually was just trying to pull it up and it broke Google, so it's all right. I'll try and actually find a good link to that. Put it up. So let me go through the last few things, man. We've already been going for, I think, well over an hour. So
dude, we could talk for an hour more.
But I know. Yeah,
nobody wants to listen to something this long. So
oh man,
good luck with that.
Well, I promise.
Feel free to edit out half my life story at the beginning.
Yeah, I promise. I'll hopefully, if you're up to it, we'll catch up again. You know, another time.
But, oh
yeah. So let me just go through these three. I wanted to do these three things.
Yeah.
The studio builder. You know, so you got the talent. I kind of envision it as three types of talent, and I want you to give me three different things. But for the person who is literally just starting out but doesn't want to start out with mistakes, you know, in your opinion, where's the first place you should start when you're thinking of getting your home studio going?
Okay, you don't have a home studio, right?
You have
starting
nothing.
From scratch?
Somebody told you should be a voiceover artist. You got that story. Somebody at the okay. gas station said you have a great voice. You should be a voiceover artist. So now they're doing it.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, hopefully you're working with a coach. Please tell me you're working with a coach. Don't put the cart before the horse. So assuming you've got a coach.
The coach is the horse then. So in other words, that might be literally the first place.
Got the horse, you know, okay. Got the coach. Of course, edgestudio.com is a fantastic resource for coaching. We've got like 30 or more coaches under our umbrella. They're great. But that you've got that straightened out. I absolutely have no problem in saying buy a USB mic. It's controversial, you know, for a lot of reasons, but I believe that there are USB mics now that have all of the quality that you need for audio, voice actor, voice over recording. Mm-hmm. Because I've had no problem throwing out specific brands on the show today.
Yeah.
My
which
favorite
we like.
Is the Shure PG42 USB. That is my favorite USB mic. It has been for now almost 4 years. There hasn't really been anything that's dethroned it. I just love it. I think it sounds good. I like its cap. I like the capsule in it. I like the voicing of it. It's not overly bright and sibilant, as many condenser mics can be. I like that it's got a gain, a proper mic gain dial, so you can dial in the right amount of gain. It's got zero latency monitoring. You can plug your headphone into it if you really want to hear yourself. It's built right in. It's got a proper shock mount. It's got a high pass filter. I mean, it's got all the right tools, the bells and whistles that you need to record a nice clean audio track, and it's cheap.
Which Shure model was that again? The PG?
Shure PG. Paul George, yep. 42 USB. It even has my favorite number in it.
Good.
42, my favorite number. It's in the model. So it's just a wonderful mic. You get that. Now, the condenser mic is a difficult mic to use in general because of its sensitivity. It's yeah. super sensitive. It picks up background noise. It picks up... you know, just everything. So now you're going to need a really quiet place to record this thing. So most of the time, that's going to be a closet, probably. Unless you are lucky enough to have a house with a basement and you live out in the burbs, the country, you're probably going to find yourself holing up in a closet. Now, a closet that already has a bunch of clothes in it is already a pretty dead space. It's acoustically damped very much. Go in your closet right now after the show. You know, and talk to yourself in your closet. Close your eyes and listen to what it sounds like. It's a very, very dry, dead, direct sound. And that's really what the needs for voiceover are. It's just a recording of your voice with as little extra crud on there as possible. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
as little reverb, echo, delay, you know, just dry. That's what you're going to get in a closet. So many people have a coat closet with a bunch of coats in it or clothes. They can shove a mic stand in there or clip a mic to a little arm to the stand of the clothing rod. Shove them, you know, stick a mic on there, plug the mic into whatever old laptop they have laying around the house, run the cable under the door, hit record, shut the door, and get a pretty damn clean sound. They won't be getting the laptop fan in there in the recording. You know, they'll be able to get that with a mic like that. And the closet will, with the clothes in there, mind you, will create a pretty nice dry, dead sound. A closet with no clothes in it will sound horrible.
That's the worst place to record.
Yeah, an empty closet is terrible. Like,
yeah.
Occasionally someone will hire me to come over to set up their closet, and I'll get there, and the closet is completely empty, and I'm going, where's all the stuff? They're, oh, I cleared it out all out because I knew you were coming. I'm like, no, put it all back in there. You need all that stuff. All that stuff is damping. It all absorbs echo, and it absorbs bass resonance, and all that stuff has to be dealt with. So acoustics are really, really, really important. If you got a quiet room in a basement or a guest room, just create a nice damped area around you with moving blankets. If you want to step it up a notch and you want to try an interesting product that my good old buddy Dan is making, go check out his VO Studio Suit. VOstudiosuit.com. It's an interesting product. It's a repurposed military surplus insulation that he is just repurposing and packaging to make it easier to hang the stuff up. But you can hang it up and make a little enclosed off area in the corner of your room, and it'll sound like a studio. It's amazing how well this stuff works. But you know, those are two super key elements. I mean, lastly is just software, I guess. Yeah.
So now you got your mid-level talent, somebody who's definitely gotten into the game. They have a clean audio interface, you know, an audio chain, I should say, mm-hmm. a vocal chain going. They have good basic equipment. Everything's rolling. They've got a little bit of income coming in. Now they've decided, you know, it's time for the next step, but I don't really know what the next step is. You know, what's the first major upgrade one should think about? Because you see, you know, thousands of dollars can be put into preamps and channel strips and mics and all that. So what's just the next mid-level step?
I mean, let's say the next mid-level step is probably going to be if your noise floor is low and your acoustics are really good. If you haven't done that stuff yet, do not start blowing money on better gear. But the next step up would be maybe a really super beautiful sounding condenser microphone. What sounds beautiful? Well, it depends on what works on your voice. But you know, starting at the $500 range, one of the unknown, lesser known, but getting to become very well known mics that I find fascinating is the CAD E100S. And CAD is a small company that's US based, and they make a handful of their mics, most of them in China, but a couple mics are making here in the US, and that's one of them. And the CAD E100S is just an interesting mic because it is super cardioid, so it has a pretty tight pickup pattern. It's extremely low noise. Like, I think it's purported to have like a 3.7 dB self noise, which is really low. And it's got a very pleasing voicing. It's not overly bright. It's not overly sibilant. It just has a really nice, smooth sound. And so if you were thinking of going to a shotgun mic, let's say you were thinking of just going right to the Sennheiser 416 for about a grand, and you wanted to have something that maybe had some similar properties, but maybe sounded a little bit smoother and cost half as much, mm-hmm. the CAD E100S is a pretty awesome option.
Okay.
The other microphones I like a lot, the AT4040 by Audio-Technica is a real nice, pleasing mic. The Charter Oak is a relatively new company out of Connecticut. Charter Oak has one I really like called the E700. Under $1,000, just unbelievably awesome sounding condenser mic. And then the guys over at Mojave Audio here in LA, they make a really awesome FET mic, you know, solid state. It's the, I think it's the 201 FET. Maybe it's the 301 now. I know they've been updating them.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. All under $1,000 mics. Over $1,000, you know, then you can start really getting, you're starting having some fun. I ran into this guy at NAMM, makes this mic called the Cathedral Pipes. This company's called the Cathedral Pipes Microphone.
Is that that big old like red tube mic or something?
Red and white. Yeah, they use his bikes are all white and red and really bold looking. And he's making like this crazy U47, U67 sort of mashup mic for what? Way under $3,000. I think it's in the $2,500 range. And it's, I've heard a couple clients send me samples. It's, you know, pretty freaking phenomenal. And this thing is handmade.
Yeah, I had somebody send me some stuff they did on one of those. I think I knew of somebody that was selling one of those.
Handmade in the LA area, like in Orange County.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's built wild by guys here. It's pretty amazing for a mic to find something that affordable.
That's cool.
So it's pretty cool. And then I think I already kind of told you my dream audio interface, the Apollo. For that $699, I mean, if you want to get rid of your aging Apogee Duet or your old M-Box Pro or whatever you're using now, you know, check out that Apollo.
I'll say from experience as someone who was an M-Box user for a long time. Now, granted, I never had the latest generation M-Box, but from what I've heard, and now speaking of, because I have Focusrite interfaces.
Yeah, I love the Focusrite stuff.
The preamps in the M-Box, and again, nothing against our fine friends at the old DigiDesign or Avid, whoever's actually making that, but the preamps are very subpar compared to some of these other same price range interfaces. Or do you disagree? Am I just not hearing things properly?
I mean, you know, the quality of the AD converter and the mic preamps have been, it's not right for me to say perfected, but I mean, for the purposes of recording a voiceover track that's going to get mixed with music and effects and all this stuff, has pretty much been kind of nailed down in the last 7 or 8 years. You're not going to hear a tremendous difference from one to the next, but if you are an engineer and you do hear those differences, going to the newest generation of M-Box will make a considerable improvement.
Okay.
The newest ones are better.
Okay, because I wasn't pleased with the whole 2 series. I had 3 different ones.
Yeah, me neither. I think they really didn't do well on that. And I think the newest Avid incarnation has improved significantly.
Admittedly, I was kind of, as we were just describing, I was that early mid-level talent, though. You know, I didn't have a lot of information yet. So I feel like now that I've gained information over the last few years, I understand the importance of a good preamp. Therefore, that's a real key thing to look at when you're buying an audio interface. As you said.
And we're talking about preamps that are built into the audio interfaces here, right, guys? So, I mean, these are all really good standalone, all-in-one boxes. If you want to go standalone preamp, though, you know, just channel strip or just straight-up preamp, you know, go have fun, man. I mean, is it necessary? I don't think so. I really don't. But if you want some tone or flavor, you know, at the low end, there's the GAP 73. Go Google it. GAP, G-A-P 73. That's a really inexpensive Neve sounding module. There's the Warm Audio WA-12 in the sub $500 range that has a really nice API sounding module for, you know, affordable. If you want to go plus $1,000, the new Manly Core is pretty badass.
Yeah.
But there's one that nobody's talking about unless you're a radio engineer, and that's the Vorsis M1. It's made by Wheatstone. It's a U.S. company that makes broadcast gear, you know, the big consoles and all that. And they make this Vorsis M1, and it's a channel strip. You know, it's got high pass, low pass, preamp, compression, downward expansion, and fully parametric EQ in one channel, one rack space. This thing is under $1,000. I think it's about $800, and it is incredible. I think it's incredible. It's just super clean. Internally, it's 100% digital. But physically, it looks like a regular analog channel strip because it's got knobs all the way down the front.
Mm-hmm.
But what's so amazing about it is it not only has the built-in AD converter, so it outputs AES and analog, but it's networkable. So you can plug it into your computer, and with Windows GUI, you have to use Windows. Sorry, Mac guys, you have to install a virtual machine with Windows to do it. But you can save all these presets and recall presets, and you can see a really cool metering system that's all on a computer screen. So if you're a geeky kind of guy, or you want to have somebody else that's the geek control it for you from over the internet like me, This thing is the miracle box. I mean, I can have someone dial me up on Source Connect, and I can remotely through TeamViewer or something, log me in, whatever. I can, while they're talking to me and reading a script, I can virtually dial in all of the settings on the box and then save it as a preset. It's as though I'm sitting with them in the studio. It is so awesome. And it just has a beautiful sound. The expander on it is just flawless. And it's just got nice, it's just a real clean, broadcast ready sound. But I think for voiceovers as well, I think it's just a phenomenal box. So it's one of my faves. Well, I could talk about this for hours.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, I think that kind of wraps us here. My final thing I was going to ask is then to go like super top tier. If you're making all the money in the world, let's even kind of say money's no issue. And just give me one thing, unless you already said it, perhaps it's the Wheatstone. But if there is one item for the studio, money's no issue, but George says this is the thing you got to get.
Oh, man, that's tough because I am such a cheap bastard. I'm just so frugal. I mean, I have a heart. When a client says I want to blow money, I go, on what?
Well, maybe just because money's no issue doesn't mean you have to spend all the money in the world.
That's the thing about working with me, guys. I mean, I hourly charging, paying me, I'm on the pricey side, but I'm going to recommend to you the best possible tools at any price point. And I'm not going to tell you that you have to spend X to get to this level because I don't feel you need to. But, from a preamp standpoint, I love the stuff made by Grace. Just ultra clean, ultra accurate. If you want a little bit of color, then go with like a John Hardy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they get brought
the John
up.
John Hardy
often.
Stuff is just beautifully made and just super clean and reliable. If you like that sound, there's this whole 500 series stuff, where it's a little lunchbox box and it's got all these little tiny channel modules in it. Mm-hmm. God, talk about a rat hole. Mm. Man, that's the new thing now in the pro audio industry is 500 modules. So you can make your own custom dream channel strip and have all these different little mini modules in one rack. So if money is no object and you love that kind of stuff, get one of these 500 series racks and fill it up with your favorite assortment of colors. So you can have a Grace preamp for cleanliness, and you can have a Focusrite red module in there, and then you could have a Neve module so you can dial in the sound you want and just go to town.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think that's where it's really fun. If you want to spend some money, that's somewhere you can kind of really have a blast and not end up having, 17 rack spaces full of stuff. You can have an 8 to 10 module 500 series unit and fill it up with a lot of different flavors and have a lot of fun, switching between them all.
Yeah.
So
that's great, man. Well, great. Yeah. As you've said, we could probably continue to talk forever. I got a lot out of it. I told you before this that at bare minimum, I knew I would get a lot out of this one. So others will as well.
That's great, man. I love it. I will talk until I literally faint from hunger.
Yeah.
Which is right about close to where I think probably both of us are.
Yeah, yeah.
But, thanks again, man. This is a huge honor. I'm a big fan of your show, the Podcasters Roundtable as well, and all these. I'm a fan of all this stuff as well as being involved in the industry. So just to be interviewed on and featured on the show is again, a big honor. Thanks so much, man.
Appreciate it. VOStudioTech.com. Just wanted to plug the website one more time. Twitter at VOStudioTech. And, I didn't bring this up. I'm going to put a link to it. VO-BB.com is a VO billboard you had.
My favorite. No, yeah, the VOBB.
VO-BB.com, right?
Yeah, it's a voiceover bulletin board. It's a forum.
The bulletin board. That's what I said wrong. Yeah, I knew it, I said
it's,
one
it's,
word
it's
wrong.
A forum for the voiceover industry, and it's not associated with anything else. It has zero advertising on it. It's extremely pure, you know, and it's a great, great resource.
Great. I forgot to mention it when we started, but anyway, I'll post a link to that. I'm going to have a ton of links, actually. There'll be a show notes page for your episode.
I'll be keeping you busy with that.
Yeah, I'll put up a bunch of these this gear you told us about. I think it's great. And then obviously all your links. So anyway, that'll do
thank
it.
You.
George Whittam, thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Oh man, it was a blast. Thanks a lot, Ryan.
The producers.
Not much to say here to wrap up part two. I just wanted to jump back on and say thanks to George. I very much appreciated his time, his expertise, his knowledge. A lot of what he did on this show is, you know, what he charges people for, but I appreciate him, you know, I mean, it's going to drum up business for him, and that's good. It should. But, you know, no holds. He said everything I wanted him to, and I respect somebody who does that. So anyway, thanks to George for being on at VO Studio Tech Twitter. Website, vostudiotech.com, not surprisingly. The group from Capital in the UK will be the next episode, and there are plenty more. If you would like to request people, I still get those from time to time. You can contact me, ryandreen@gmail.com. That's kind of the, you know, that's the email address I use all the time. Ryan@ryanontheradio works too. You can also use the contact form on my website. And, I mean, honestly, just hit the site if you ever need me or if you ever want to chime in on something. Absolutely wide open. And that'll wrap it up. Thanks so much. Bye.
This is The Producers. Have a question, comment, or concern? Email Ryan at ryanontheradio.com. The Producers. Thanks for listening.